Welcome back to the Skits and Giggles podcast. I'm Pascal, chief instigator of this show and your host. I'm joined by my co-host and the resident engineer, the yin to my yang, the fresh prince to my jazzy Jeff, Bryson. How's it going today?
Hey, Pascal. Doing well. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much. Today, we are joined by our good writing buddy and the queen of the switchbacks, as we called her the other day, Louisa. How's it going, Louisa?
Hey, it's great. Thanks for having me.
Well, you're very welcome. We're looking forward to the conversation. And we also have to thank you for doing this podcast in English. We really appreciate it and looking forward to our discussion on learning later on. But before we get to our conversation, let's briefly do our spiel with the social and where you guys can find more information about the Skits and Giggles podcast. We are currently most active on Instagram, where you can skid right into our DMs and follow along at Skits and Giggles. And you can find our website with all the relevant links and info under the URL skitsandgiggles.com. Also, if you guys like what we're doing and want to know what's up, just give us a follow on Spotify. Hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you listen to great podcasts. Finally, sharing episodes you enjoy on your socials or a heartfelt 5-star rating on your favorite platform goes a long way in helping us reach more people like you. Right on, let's get back to Louisa. The funny thing about today is that Louisa is not only an interesting guest in her own right, she also sent in a very interesting suggestion for a discussion topic about learning on the mountain bike. So the natural thing for us to do was to invite her on to explore the topic together. So Louisa, we started asking our guests a while back to lay out what kind of mountain bikers they are, just to set the stage a bit before we get into the main conversation. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into your mountain biking, and what your riding looks like today?
Sure, yes. That's a very broad question. So I think
that's
compared
why we
to,
ask it.
Compared to most of your guests, I think I'm quite new to mountain biking. I started, there's not one point, but I probably started trail riding more 4 years ago. Before that, I had a mountain bike, which was like a 26-inch super steep alloy. It was shitty. It was really shitty. I cycled up the mountain, and then like my dad wanted to take me to the trail, and I didn't want to go because on the trail you have to brake so much, and I didn't like that. I just wanted to blast down the gravel roads, and that's what I did for a while, like going up and going down. And then 4 years ago, the summer, I was still living in Paris back then, but I was always biking on vacation. And that's like the summer that I spent at home in Heidelberg, where I come from, where actually the riding is fantastic. And then I started to ride more trails, and I realized, okay, well, you have to brake way more and you go way slower actually on the trail, but it's still a bit more fun. And then I had to finish like 1 year in Paris, and after that I moved to Switzerland and it just exploded. So now I mostly ride enduro. In winter, that means for me hardtail riding on Uetliberg, just going up and down the same track every day, but it's a different track because there's snow, there's mud, there's ice, there's everything. Sometimes it's even quite good. And in summer I'm pretty much every weekend I'm somewhere in the mountains, preferably with a shuttle. But yeah, still a lot of climbing in my riding though.
It's actually pretty disgusting following you on Strava and seeing how far you get around and all these cool destinations where you go. And so what has been the most interesting discovery recently, maybe?
There's so many discoveries. When I moved here, I think the first year I just rode like Flims, Lenzerheide, Davos because I was just blown away that I could actually get there by train. And now I think it's a bit more diverse. What was nice? Actually, school. I really liked where we went. The thing you did the episode on as well.
I heard you're a fan of Davos.
Yes, I am. I was there last weekend, gonna be back there this weekend probably. yeah. No, we rode in Fribourg the other weekend, which was super nice. Close to Fribourg. I like that a lot. Like, actually, very surprisingly wet. I wasn't prepared for that. And then sometimes quite flat. And I was quite tired. But it was actually super nice trails. Like, they were supposed to be low me. And you could imagine them being loamy. But it seemed,
With less wet, it was loamy.
Exactly. Yeah, no, but very nice. Also super nice steep sections, ruts, roots, rocks, everything I like.
Well, coming back to school, we obviously did the episode the other day. We were obviously big fans. Bryson had a bit of a struggle with the destination. I generally enjoyed it. So what was your main takeaway from going to school?
That I really need the mullet. No, it was actually... I had the bike for like 1.5 months then. And I had mostly done like shitty mud rides with it because it was a shitty May. So I was really excited to bring it to the mountains. There was really still a lot about that also for me, and like do some shuttle runs and get it. And I was super happy. I mean, you talked about switchbacks, and God, they were tight. Like shit. And with the full 29er that I wasn't used to in the mountains, I was really... really happy to like to learn it with that to now switch it back and say, okay, well, I have a little bit more space in the rear, it's just a bit more flexible. So when I think back to that trip is like, oh my God, I'm glad I changed. Well, I mean, there's lots of other takeaways, but yeah.
So are you really noticing the difference for the mullet setup?
It's crazy. Like, it's actually funny. I'm not the person to notice a lot of things, to be honest. Like, a friend of mine once told me it's weird. I do notice weird things. Like, when the brake, like, with the brakes, when they're too far, like, too far from the grips, I can't cope. But other things, like suspension setup and that kind of stuff, I'm not very specific. I don't change it much. But... with the like the change from the full 29er to the mullet, it was like it's worlds, it's a different bike. I love it.
Okay, well, we also need to clarify. I think I was on the recording on school, I was a bit off the mark with your height. You're actually 175 meters tall. So so what's that, 5'9"? So that's actually pretty, you know, good size for normally you would expect a 29er to be quite okay, but I guess you're used to 27
and a half.
Yeah,
it's kind of on the edge, but I'm used to the 27, and I think the kind of riding and my style of riding, like, is not really full 29er.
Yeah.
Ish.
Well, I mean, we talked a lot about switchbacks, and I think obviously the main topic for today is learning. So I think a good segue to the main discussion would be how did you learn to ride switchbacks in the Alpine like you do? Because to watch it's quite fascinating. Because again, you know, you said you're on this relatively big bike for yourself, and but still you kind of somehow manage to do it, and even the tightest ones, and your very your perseverance with trying to get around those switchbacks is admirable. So how do you do it?
Yeah, actually, this it's funny because this circles a bit back to Davos, because I really still remember when I went to Davos for the first time. I was like, shit. Like, I really suck at this, and this really kills the flow. And I really remember, like, going back in the car saying, like, okay, I need to learn this. This isn't fun. Like, because really, if you can't do it, you just stop in every corner, and you walk your bike around, and then, like, it's really not fun. So I think when I look how I ride switchbacks now, I think it's very much influenced by the fact that I could not lift my rear wheel for like forever. So, and that my older bike, my old Bronson, was super short, even for me. And so what I did, because I think I always had like quite good balance, but I just never had like the confidence, or probably also not the good body position and upper body strength to really lift my rear wheel well. So what I really trained myself and what I really perfectionized is like to make, or not perfectionize, but get good at, is to really try to make space when I start the corner, because that is what... Even in the switchbacks in school, it kills you, because even when you can lift your rear wheel super well and super, if your front wheel is not in a position that you can actually make it work, that like your lifting will not help you at all. And now I've gotten a bit better at it. So as Bryson, I think, accurately described, if it's really necessary, then I'm just going to lift it a bit and it's going to work out. But I think the harder part is even to get yourself, like in switchbacks, like school, it's really to get your bike in a position where you can start lifting your rear.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the, again, as you say, is the making space where there isn't really any, and you know, how do you approach your turns, how you position your front wheel,
Early, I think, where to go actually on the inner side a bit, to then be able to go super wide out and just, yeah, I think the usual tip you get is like, look where you go, but that can be super tricky and it can also kill you. Like in various situations, looking where I want to go has killed me already. Yeah. And I mean, I think that also the process to getting there, I mean, this is like the how I would describe my technique. But I think the process to getting there is just what you also witnessed in school, like trying it 1,000 times and, yeah, then trying it 1,000 times, and when it then works, I just love that feeling. So.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think that's generally what brings a lot of people to the sport, or keeps them in the sport, or brings them back to the sport, is this sense of achievement of overcoming an obstacle. And yes, of course, you know, switchbacks is one thing, but there can be simpler things like a simple drop, or nailing a line, or you know, managing a little jump or something like that, that you know, that starts from an early age. I see it obviously with my kids, that you know, the very simple things that gets them excited about trying stuff, and that continues on even to this day for myself at my advanced age. But maybe to bring it back, I mean, I guess what I saw from having ridden with you now for, yeah, was that now a bit over a year, a couple of times, what is always fascinating me is that in all the little downtime that we obviously have in riding with Bryson, with all the bike tickling and readjusting his saddle and brake pads and this and that.
And the P-brakes.
And the P-brakes. And the snack brakes.
Oh, yeah, but those are pre-cramping. Snack brakes. Don't question snack brakes, please.
No, never. Always be snacking. But the pre-cramping, the at-cramping, and the post-cramping is, of course, what I see is that you're never sitting still, apart from the snacking. And you're always doing something to kind of, you know, simple things like practicing track stands and trying crank flips and wheelies and, you know, little endos and stuff like that. So has that always been a part of your process, or is that, you know, something you just do to kill the time?
Probably not always, because... usually I was the one like way behind then coming, and everyone was already waiting, had already peed, snacked, cramped and everything. And then I was the one like, okay, I'm here now. I don't need a break. Let's just continue. But like, I can't go faster. So it for sure wasn't that case forever. But yeah, it is. I just get bored quite quickly. This is the one question your company, but no, I just if I have the time and I have the bike, I just I can talk and do stuff. So I can do it both, and I think it's like extra fun added to your ride when you suddenly can do like a half decent crank flip. Now I can't do it anymore actually because I changed my hub and like it doesn't work. I lost it. So yeah, for me it's like you have the ride which is fun and the company which is fun, and then you have that on top, so it's like added fun.
Oh yeah, for sure. This you know, this is steady practicing, and yeah, so it's even the simple things. What are you currently in your writing? What are you working on the most currently, and how do you approach that?
I think there's one thing that I'm always working on, which for me is really the basis, is riding hardtail, trying to ride my hardtail cleaner and better. I think that is for everything I do on the enduro bike. It helps. Like on the hardtail, it's just I love it how I just rode it today, like in between rain showers, and it's so black and white. On you feel like a pro, and you feel like you're dying. It's so close to each other, and the line is so fine. And for me, that's a very general thing that I like. I have a trail hardtail which I really love, and a pump track hardtail, and so like a dirt jumper, and like progressing at those, riding those two cleaner, faster, and in a like nicer, I think is something I always work on. I love it. And I think in a more concrete way for me, it's like the one hard thing in mountain biking, it's like turns, like being able to do more open, wide turns, nicer, faster. That's something that's really not my strength.
I don't think you're ever done with turns, because I think you can always improve, even if you're Sam Hill or Richie Root, who can, you know, do cutties to rip his tires off.
I don't race, so I don't train for speed or anything. But I mean, your corner speed is what makes your speed pretty much, because I mean anyone can go like.
But the flip side to speed is efficiency. So if you can go the same speed, then you know it just, and using less energy and being more efficient is of course the hopefully the more preferable outcome.
Yeah, but that's also the racer perspective, because I don't. Maybe I should, but I don't really care about my riding efficiency. I'd rather go like just 100 meters of trail, like all out and kill myself almost, and then have to stop and recollect myself than do like the whole trail efficiently in the best average speed.
Yeah, but I mean, it's, well, that's, yeah, of course, that's,
a
personality thing, yeah. Right? So it's kind of, so yes, you know, don't make any excuses or secrets of that of a racer mindset, let's say, at the very least. I do the odd race here and then, but I think the mindset doesn't necessarily stop at the race. It can also translate to just riding a trail. Getting, because there is just not the space to stop at every turn, or you don't want to stop at every turn.
Also, it's annoying when you have to stop because you're so stoked, but you can't go anymore. That's
exactly
that, so shit. Yeah.
So then, you know, if you can do, let's say, five corners on an exposed single track, then, you know, if you're getting through the first three more efficiently, that means you're fresher and safer for the last two, and that's kind of the other perspective. I think that's more the point I wanted to make.
Yeah.
But when you learn, or when you're working on new skills, I think is the overarching theme, not necessarily learning learning new things or new tricks or new skills alone. So when you work on your technique or skills, etc. So what are the tools that you use to help improve?
That's a good question. That sounds very much like Bryson's approach with the very conscious, okay, what is this, like very conscious thinking about, okay, well, how can I improve this? So for me, I have a couple of things that are super important for the learning, which are very general, not as conscious steps as for Bryson. I think I learn best in that situation where I can just, where it's the same feature or the same trail, like for the thousandth time. I mean, riding tons and different locations will help you also with your riding. But I think what I like in terms of like learning efficiency, the just knowing that turn so well, riding it a bit differently and having this really step-by-step progression, that's probably also very different for different kind of people. But for me, I think I'm more of a conservative learner, that I try new stuff only when I have learned the former stuff really well. If I'm really confident that this next step is possible and it's like a small iteration on what I did. So for me, the pump track is an amazing learning environment because I think sometimes the people there think I'm crazy because I just do the same line over and over again, and like the difference to my ride is like so minimal. Then there's also some statistical variance, so that sometimes it's even worse and then it gets better. But like on average, there's progress, but over such a long time. But it comes from like having ridden that line like so many times. And now I have the confidence that I can say, okay, I can make little things and change this and try out that. And then like now there's like the big step in front of me that I have to change to the bigger line. And it's like, that's, I know other people, they just, okay, I can do the small jumps. Now I can do the big jumps. But I'm like, okay, I have to like be really sure that I can do the first jump. Then I can maybe try the second one. But if I like already know when like taking off that I can land it well, then I can be in the mindset that I could try the second one, but maybe also not. So I really need that repetition over, in the same spot 1,000 times, which is the same, I think, for me with switchbacks. That's how you learn them, trying them. Trying a different line. Yeah. Maybe filming yourself.
And failing. Failing is the critical part of learning.
Yeah. Failing sounds so judgmental. It's like...
not being successful.
That's not less judgmental.
Negative connotation.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. But I mean, failing is a good tool for learning. It's a really good tool. And failing differently... many times.
The point I wanted to make, just because you can call it a fail, it can still be a win. For example, you're doing the pump track and you're deciding, okay, on this corner, I'm going to take a new line, maybe a little bit tighter, a little bit slower or faster. And then you realize, like you said, maybe it's actually overall not going to bring you anything more, but perhaps it sets you up for another corner or the straightaway to give you like speed for a double or an extra little oomph in your pump. And therefore, you could call it a win after all. I mean, by exploring those options that what it seems like could bring you a fail, you could learn other things, which would maybe gain you a net overall. And then looking back on what you learned from that, you actually win in the greater scheme.
Yeah, exactly. Also, I mean, failing, I think, is so important, like, for your mind, especially for me. It's just, I mean, I had to learn it on switchbacks and in steep stuff, but there, like, I'm much better. But on a pump track, I'm so crazy scared of, like, doing a tiny mistake because it's, like, the hardtail on the trail. It's also so black and white. It's so smooth if you get it right, and it's so fucking unsmooth when you don't get it right. Like, it's like if you're used to like the enduro and like the big fork, big shock, and everything, and then like you're just like you're not concentrated on the pump track for a second, and like you get a hit that you don't like. It's really not nice. So
it's almost like a laboratory. So because it's so transparent and honest with what you're doing, and So yeah, I think it's pump tracks are a great way to practice skills, to work on your technique, and it's not necessarily the gnarliest line and the biggest jumps and all that sort of stuff. It's really the simple things of, you know, pumping your way through a line and finding the speed where there really isn't any, and doing the turns properly, or, well, trying different ways to do the turns, because of course, you know, there's a different way, or the best way for every rider. I mean, it's not the same line for everyone. So I think it's pretty good, and there's nothing else, right? So especially with the modern concrete or asphalt pump tracks, they're, you know, you can ride them in rain or shine. It's always the same. Sometimes there's a bit of debris and stuff, but in comparison to a trail that is changing, you know, 15 minute intervals, depending on the day, you know, it's a lot more laboratory like, if you will, than
and the feedback, as you say, it's so crazy transparent. Like, I think I really learned to have like my weight centered on the bike on the pump track, because the trail bike, it just allows you, it always allowed me to shift back a little and I could still like ride a trail, but the pump track, you can't ride with your weight shifted a little back. It just like, it doesn't work. You can't jump in, like you can pump, you can jump. It doesn't work. And it will show you immediately if you do it. And that's, I think it's amazing.
You already mentioned the keyword video earlier. Are you using any of those techniques to work on your skills and your writing?
Yes. In general, yes. So sometimes it's really, really conscious, like doing those great corner drills. Like sometimes it's meaning I think I did it like twice in my life, but I did it once recently, like filming and with cones and with the new bike. And I think it reminded me of how much it helps. So that was really the conscious, okay, we'll go to the streets, do that, film it, look at how we're doing, make fun of each other as well. For sure, that's part of it, but it was very conscious. But then also, I mean, with Instagram and depending who you have around and like filming each other on the trail, which can also just be cool to have the video after, it's kind of natural, like to, in some groups it's just natural, okay, well, we have some cool videos in the end, and then there for sure is also going to be like a couple of fails in there, like when you say, okay, this is the hard spot, this I'm gonna do, so it would be cool to have on video when I get that. Like there's usually like 3 to 4 fails before that. And I think I like to, when I post, I like to post also like the fail before, because yeah, it sometimes it also shows how hard it is sometimes.
Yeah, well, I guess that's, I think, you know, it's just a side note of how it's just Instagram being like the most polished version of yourself. And of course, everything is super easy and you're always nailing that trick and that turn and that jump.
But then
and all of
if
this,
you're so. Just nailing it, it looks so easy.
Oh,
so,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Although I must admit, I have a video from last year in Davos, actually the world famous off camber janky rock slap Meyerhof.
I took the ugliest line on that on Sunday, like really the ugliest.
But I literally managed to grease that turn for the first time maybe like 2 weeks before. And I've been riding that trail for a very long time.
And that is a nasty one.
And it's, you know, we rocked up to it and then we were like, well, let's just do it like every other corner. You know, set up wide, try the widest line you can find, take it slow, and somehow I got it. And then since then, I've never dabbed on that slab ever since. And it's like one of the most exposed features in all of those. And everyone that sees that video is like, I can't believe how composed you are while you're staring down that the abyss of that corner.
A friend of mine once like really went straight face down into the bushes there. It's like I still have that picture in my mind, like, whoa, fuck.
It's not a good time if you go down straight there. Nah. So that's for sure. Nah. But yeah,
it was
so
fine. That's a fail, you learn. Okay, exactly. Well, I can go head down the steep stuff and I don't die.
Yeah.
It's an important part of learning.
Luisa, are you watching video from any other riders trying to pick up some points, like analyzing what they're doing and maybe even watching some how-tos?
Not consciously, usually. I mean, I watch a lot of riders just like through my everyday consumption of World Cup racing and related videos that I like. And I think I take a lot from it unconsciously. I think there are a couple of points that I once took like really that were like really tips or like verbal explanations on how to do something better that really clicked for me. But those are really like very little, like a very few. And the rest is more like just watching. And then it's like this imitating, okay, well, others do it like that. And when then I look at my video, oh, that doesn't look that doesn't look similar at all. what could I do differently? But yeah, it's more of an unconscious imitation.
That's actually where I was going with this, because I've also done my fair share of watching mountain bike pros and, you know, guys in my hometown and afar doing features that I've tried to ride and similar things in similar locations, similar terrain that I'm trying to kind of emulate. And the one key thing that I've taken away from it is when I try to perform what I think is exactly what they did, the outcome isn't the same. And therefore, what I tried to understand from that was maybe we are not doing the same thing, but what it gets me is something to learn from. So it's, I don't know, you know, I can think of maybe a bench cut trail. It's heading downhill, and then there's like kind of a lofty, loamy like shoulder, and you just kind of like try to pop up onto it and maybe do just kind of a little jib, and you can see hundreds of riders before you do any kind of jib up this little shoulder and, you know, kick dirt up or slash or whatever it is. And you can try doing all of this as yourself, and it will always look different. What are we trying to do by thinking that we can do the same thing as somebody else?
But I think that would have been my next point, that it's, for me, it's probably less the pro riders. Those are really like, of course, somewhere in the mind, okay, that would be cool if I could ride like that. But what's way more helpful, I think, is the riders that you really ride with. So those who are in front of you, and those can make a much bigger difference because you see them ride the trail if you're lucky. And you can just imitate their movements in a much smoother way, like to see, okay, well, if he can pop on that feature, if he does that movement or she, then like theoretically I should be able to do that as well. And then sometimes you learn something and sometimes you fail really hard, but it's much easier to like learn right in the context and like in the flow of things than watching a video, going to your trail with your bike, with your abilities and trying to imitate that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's a very good point in terms of, you know, the people you surround yourself with when you ride is also kind of a big influence and inspiration on your own technique and riding, right? So it's I'm always very, very interested and curious to see kind of what I can learn from someone else. Yes, I know, Bryson, it doesn't look like that, but I'm a very visual person. I observe, like other riders around me. I watch a ton of videos, look at the minute detail, try even the frames and stuff like that to understand what's actually going on. And I think that's you know, that's a very important component for me and for let's say progressing my own writing, if you will. I think what is the most valuable input in that regard is like really how the other writers in the group see you write. So because of course you have your division of like you're jamming, everything is great, you're, you know, super cool trails, everything is fine. And then people are riding behind you and are like, you know, what are you doing? I mean, why are you doing this? Why are you not trying something else? So, you know, we've had our common friend Yeti. First time we went to Finale a couple of years ago, and it was like was my first trip to Finale, and I think one of the really first trips to like a dedicated trail riding or downhill riding spot, and just having the time to really put in the time, just focusing on the downhills and taking the time to kind of, you know, listen what he had to say. It's like after the one run, he was like, you know, Pascal, why are you doing so much work on the bike? Why are you not letting the bike do the work for you? And I was like, what are you even talking about? And then, you know, he starts switching it up in the group, and I started watching the other riders, started watching him, like how he kind of operates or finds the balance between doing the work himself and letting the bike do the work. And then I was like, all of a sudden, I was like, oh, actually, maybe I should try this. And then all of a sudden, it's like, you know, there was this little light bulb moment. I was like, well, wow, that's really good. And then every other time, so then I ride with Bryson, and sometimes he's like, you know, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? And then you start thinking about it, and then start looking at videos or something else. And I think this kind of constant feedback loop with your, you know, between seeing yourself and your friends seeing you ride, is a very important
I fully
component.
Agree, actually, and I think we can do that even way more, like to not call each other out, but like try to give tips on the things we can improve, because I think it's usually just the culture is more in the way that you like you talk about the stuff that you're really good at, but like what to improve is it's a bit harder to bring as a topic. But it would be great to talk about it way more.
Yeah, fully agree. Personally, I should do a much better job at that. on both ends, in receiving as well as dishing out.
Pascal, why don't you cramp more?
Maybe I should be cramping more. So yeah, no, I haven't. Yeah, no, I don't want to cramp again. I've had plenty of cramps in my life, so I think I've done all of those. I've done all of them, done with cramps. But yeah, no, I mean it's a very valid point, especially when you're riding in a group that knows each other very well. You kind of, you know, it's generally a very good vibe. There's you know, there's that space where you can sit down and say like, hey, you know, have you thought about this? And you know, why don't you try this?
This is a bit off topic, but I think that's a big advantage of biking as a woman, because I think we just get way more tips. And sometimes it's really annoying. Yeah, I don't even want to call it that, because I think that the term is really overused. But I mean, to be honest, I think the threshold for tips is just a bit lower, and it can be super annoying, but it can also be so helpful. It's crazy.
But to bring it back to learning, I think one thing I'm really interested in personally is inspiration from other sports. Are you taking any of the techniques from, let's say, other disciplines or other sports altogether into account in your riding?
I'm probably the wrong person to ask for this, because I don't do much else. No, I have some other influences probably. So I grew up like skiing a bit, not like people who grow up in Switzerland, but like skiing, I think, well, for how much skiing I did, like a week a year. And that, I think, does make a big difference. I talked to two friends last summer. One is like a really good snowboarder and one is a really good skier. And it's so interesting to see how different, at what different things they're good at because of the sports they're so good at. Like the snowboarder, she's so good at the front and back loading. So she's super good at pushing over drops or steps and that kind of stuff. And the skier, she's so good at turns. It's crazy. But it's just they struggle more with the other side that they don't have, because that they can just transfer over. But to be honest, I don't have that thing that I can just transfer over. I think for me, it's more... I used to do horseback riding when I was young, so I already know. And really, it's not as cool as the free ride stuff, but I think it requires quite a similar mindset, at least in the way that I did it. Really, it's quite a mind game, I think.
Okay, so you have plenty of experience of being thrown off the horse, quite
literally.
Yeah,
being scared. And now, actually, it's with horses, it's even more interesting, because you're scared, but there is an animal that will feel when you're scared, so you cannot, you actually cannot be scared, or you cannot show it, because the horse will get that. So maybe that's when I approach a switchback, and I tell myself, okay, well, the bike cannot realize that I'm scared. That might help.
The bike is not allowed to win.
Yeah.
I got this.
I think a bike and me, we're both winning in that case, because, I already put some decent scratches in my quite new bike.
That's good. No, I just find it interesting, this cross inspiration. And yes, of course, skiing is a very good one. We've had the conversation before, and you mentioned it yourself, that people that have kind of certainly an alpine skiing background, that they're generally very familiar with the notion of kind of leaning the bike over and finding the grip on the edge of the tires and stuff like that.
And it's crazy, some people who have that background, I don't know, who are just familiar with airtime, they just take and with balance and weight shifting, and they just take a bike and they do two or three runs, and then they go to the park and then they do crazy stuff.
Yeah, but that's the same stuff with, if you listen to motocross riders or supercross riders coming to mountain biking, they are struggling with slow, janky, technical things, and then you put them on super fast, rough, big jumps, everything else, they're oh wow, I'm right at home. That's pretty pretty easy. So yeah, I think, but that I guess is to my point, right? Is kind of there is a lot of scope for kind of, let's say, cross inspiration, right? So,
even within biking, there are so many disciplines in biking, taking the inspiration from smaller bikes, bigger bikes, different. And then even within one discipline within biking, if you say enduro here looks so different to enduro from my home, back home in Germany. So it's you can get inspiration from so much closer, even, which is so, so incredibly diverse.
Oh, absolutely. And another point we discussed before we started recording is, of course, this conditioning on your hometown riding, right? There's also, we talked a little bit about, traveling and riding in different places, and how that kind of opens you up to learning different skills and more diverse riding environments. But back to your point of riding the pump track and doing the thousand times the same line in your pump track, I think there's also value in perfecting your home trail. But there's a good balance between perfecting your home trail and also kind of having the exposure to some diverse other
absolutely
terrain.
I think that is really the base work that you can always improve and always work on that base, but then it's bring that skill that you acquire and you improve, for me it's bringing it to the enduro bike, and with the enduro bike to anywhere, and that will being able to even if a skill, if you have it, but you're not, like, you cannot apply it in the situation, it won't help you at all. Like, if you're not sure, can I do this? Or, like, not feeling the terrain or the ground, then even if you have, like, the perfect technique, but your mind can say, well, like, even mind or even, like, the skill for that specific terrain can be so specific that it won't help you in the end.
Definitely, from experience, doing things with repetition, sessioning, you're gonna see the fastest gains. It's like how athletes train with hill sprints or what do you call it? Intervals. You just get stronger and stronger.
Well, you will never see me do that. You know, but yeah,
it's one thing to get stronger and stronger, but that's also improving your technique each time as well, which is also helping your strength. And it might be the strength in your muscle, but also might be the strength in your mind, knowing that you're confident enough each time again to repeat or better what you just did. I mean, do you do that? Do you kind of just say, okay, I'm going to ride this line like I normally do, but I'm going to try to do something that I don't ever do?
On the pump track, actually, not so much. Like, there, it's really hard for me to do, like, big steps in, like, to change big things because I'm so scared there. So, like, really crossing over, like, trying a new jump there is, for me, is, like, I need to prepare myself for a while. So I have to at some point, because I feel I have to progress more, because it's, like, on one line you can then progress, like, you can go up, 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 but there is, like, a ceiling, or you, of course, you can still progress a lot, but it's then slower. And I feel like if I had the confidence and improve my technique on the, like, sharper takeoffs, it would help me much more. But then, like, there's a lot more, like, from the comfort zone, I get thrown really into the fear zone, and I have to work hard to get, like, the fear zone to the comfort zone again. And it's a very disruptive for me on the pump track. I think on the enduro bike, it's so much easier to just, like, at least for me, it's just easier to try. I mean, not with big jumps as well. Like, jumps are always, they just, consequences are so much higher, but to try to ride a trail that I know well differently is, for me, much easier, like, on the trail than on the pump track, actually.
Yeah, and that's one of the highlights for trail riding for me, is if I'm going to a new section, I want to ride a different line. Yeah.
But also, ride it differently and to have that aha moment for me is to follow someone who just rides it differently. Like, when I ride a trail that I know well by myself, it will be, just mentally, it's very hard to diverge, because it's like, it was actually funny now, when I switched the bike, trails that I know well, I'm not so fast with the new bike, because I try to ride it the same as with the smaller bike, and it doesn't really work. And, like, new trails that I don't know, I know, okay, I can go straight, it will work. But, like, those where I had my lines dialed before, I tried to ride it as with the 27-inch super short bike, and it's a... Yeah, it doesn't work so well with the big wheels and the longer bike. So, what I wanted to say is, I think the easiest for me, at least, or, like, from the mental side, is to follow someone and have that, whoa, I can ride that line, or I can do this here, and then this is going to be smoother. Yeah.
So I see where you're going with that. Like, but can you take that away and do it without following somebody? So, for example, this is something I try to do. You have your home trail or your favorite trail or whatever it is, and you know some line is, like, the money, right? You just can grease that line and stick it or whatever it is, and you feel like that's the line, and I feel so good when I pull that move off. Do you ever try to deviate from that and say, like, okay, well, what if there's an even greasier line? Or, like, what if I can cut it harder and totally, like, realize, okay, nope.
Yes. Sometimes by accident.
Perfect.
I mean, you just don't, you don't always have the same day, you don't always have the same conditions you ride in, and then you end up on different lines, even randomly. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. And that's, I think, also the beauty of it. Sometimes it's a very conscious choice where I know, okay, well, this I'm not riding so well, so I try to do it differently on a line that I think I have, like, dialed. Then it's more, probably more that situation where I, like, I know I have, like, a plan B and C if I mess it up. And maybe they turn out to be better. For example, I think maybe you know Spielplatz Trail in Zurich. It has quite the spicy entry. It's a bit mean because also you have like zero warm-up. And when I first rode it, I was super conscious on, okay, well, if I go left there and then turn right, like to find the smoothest line. And I think the more I've, and it's also blind when you enter, you have to, it's a right corner, right hand, and then it's like, it's just roots and steep, and you have to catch yourself before the end, or you're gonna go places you don't wanna go. And I think the more I rode it, and the more I fucked up that line that I had chosen, which was so good, I learned that actually, you can just go straight. And if you kind of stay in control and just be careful that you can break in the end, it's just like you can kind of roll anywhere. But it wasn't conscious. It was, just super far left. It gets really gnarly, I gotta say. But as long as you stay away from that one bigger thing, then... Yeah, but it was more of a random discovery that, okay, that line is great, but all the others work as well, and they're way more straight.
I see. Because when I ride a trail, especially one that I know, I like to approach it with like a new eye. And I know I have the old eyes for it, and I think I might have new eyes for it, like seeing a different approach, having a different angle of approach to a corner, or slower or faster, and I see other people do those as well, and I think, okay, maybe I could try that, but where is it going to leave me afterwards? Okay, that's kind of an afterthought, but I want to try it anyways, because I just kind of want to feel like, what if I do something that's not meant to be done, and maybe it works really well, and maybe I learn something from it, or maybe I just have a new experience. It's kind of like what gets me going, like floats my boat, you know, like to just kind of try those things and say that they didn't work. And I'm like happy about that. That's aspect of riding for me.
A very similar approach to your bike tickling, right?
It's a group dynamic, right? So, and you know, there's the right balance for the right group, right? So some groups, they want to try more different lines or different features and stuff like that, and others just want to ride more. I mean, you know, it all depends a little bit on that. But I think we have to. Well, apart from Bryson, you obviously know a thing or two about teaching and coaching and all these things. But I think both Louisa and I we're talking more from our own personal experience rather than from a professional certification. So it's just our own perspective. But I think overall, I think maybe to close out, you know, maybe Louise, what if there's one thing when it comes to learning new stuff or new skills or new tricks on the bike, what is your main point? What is your most important tool in the toolbox?
I think one point that I would want to make, which we haven't touched actually, which I realize now, it's like implicitly it's in there, but I think it's like the most important thing for me, like to not get ego in the way, in whatever way, to not be like, okay, probably it's not going to work, so I'm not going to try. In that way, just like accept that you're gonna fail 10 times and then maybe it works, or maybe it's just a bit less shitty, but that's also great. So in that way, but also in the other way, just be sure you only try the stuff that does make sense to try, and don't overdo it. I think ego mostly hurts in biking, in one way or the other. Not progressing or...
Progressing too hard.
Yes. Exactly.
Okay. Bryson, what do you got on this?
I'm not sure where ego falls for me. I don't consciously try to progress. I just want to ride my bike, have fun, try different things. Like I explained before, I just want to see where my creativity takes me. So turn harder, or should I go slower or faster, or, you know, just try to interpret everything differently and see what it brings to me. And then, yeah, just kind of look back and see, did I make the right choice? Did I like it? Do I want to do it again? Do I want to improve on it? Or I don't know. I don't really, I used to want to be a pro, of course, like growing up in Vancouver, watching all these guys on the North Shore and elsewhere, I was, you know, totally into getting like the same bike and kit and everything. And I wanted to be one of those guys, and realized soon I'm not so athletic or talented, but I really wanted to, and I tried to push myself. Nowadays, I don't try to progress. I just enjoy my time on the bike because I know through experience, good and bad, I'm going to learn something from it. And it's up to me to interpret that in order to, yeah, I guess progress myself, or at least at the basic level, have a good time.
Okay, very good. And your main, what is your main input or your main tool for if you talk about learning on the bike?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is that you find that thing that makes it important to you. So I can give my example very shortly. I'm into like finding new places, going different places, experiencing different things. And so right now I've been spending a lot of time on my road bike as well, because, you know, we're in Switzerland, so there's a ton of like mountain passes. So I've kind of put this challenge upon myself to do like all of these passes, like not like the big ones, but just the local ones for now. And it brings me this sense of accomplishment and, you know, all these things that you want to kind of to give you endorphins, right? So there's that. And then, of course, it translates into mountain biking. We're going to different places like Schkol and Davos. And you introduced me to Davos and, you know, and such. So finding that thing that really lights the match or sparks or whatever and continue with it. I think it's a really important part. Pascal, I'd like to hear your take.
My take is not, it's not a recommendation as such. It's just, I think the power of visualization, both in using videos to inspire your own riding, be it new tricks, be it new techniques or whatever it is, watching pros, watching other friends or whatever, ride stuff that you want to ride. So bringing it back to your inspiration, what you want to progress towards, etc. I think that is a very important tool for me personally. I try to use this as much as I can. Of course, I ride most of the time on my own. So last year, I bought myself a little tripod that I can use to film myself doing corner drills and experiment with different cornering techniques. So I kind of started comparing, different riders' styles with different backgrounds and kind of trying to translate that to my own riding. So specific example was... it was Casper Woolley, a Squamish junior EWS rider. He's from an alpine ski racing background. So if you look at him cornering and compare that to, I think we discussed it on the last episode with, the pro tips of on cornering and, you know, doing your rotating your hips, etc. So if you watch him turn, he doesn't actually turn his hips all that much, which is something I'm kind of pretty familiar with because I've grown up skiing quite a lot and doing quite a bit of that myself. So I was just trying with that and see how that translates to my own riding and comparing the different videos and then looking at how the corners actually turned out. So I think it's an important tool. It's something that's with a relatively modern smartphone. It's pretty cheap, pretty easy to do, and it's something that you can also do with your friends or your family or whatever, and can help you progress or improve or whatever your measuring stick is with your writing quite a bit.
It's always great when you have something to take a look at. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, exactly. Is that notion of what you think you're doing and what you're actually doing. Mm. That is always, that discrepancy is always quite entertaining, actually.
Yeah. It is a very powerful professional tool. The bomb has dropped. We need to enter sound effect. We have a listener question from an avid listener. And so the question is, does Louisa think endos around right switchbacks are faster, or if Jesse Malamed's skid through tactic is? What's your take, Louisa?
Wait, so first I'm thinking about who sent this. I'm not sure I understood the question. So it's about right spit, like on the right side specifically. Yeah.
Right side turn switchbacks. So it's either endo or the Jesse Malamed famous skid through.
Yeah. I mean, the obviously super annoying answer is it depends. For me, it's definitely the skid through, because I have to go almost full, or like depends on the corner, probably full stop for the endo. So that makes it quite, like, can be fun, but makes it quite unflowy and slow. So if there is any way I can roll through, for me, it's probably like, it's for sure faster if I roll through. If you're like the super stylish person who can just like roll through on the front wheel, then go for it. You can probably do it way faster than me anyways. But I think the Floria line should be the faster if it's possible in general.
Well, we're getting towards the end of our time, so we would like to close out the show with our close out questions. So Louisa, why don't you tell us a little bit about that first bike that got you really stoked on riding a bike?
It was a beautiful one. It's still, I met it at the pump track a couple of weeks ago because I sold it to a 12-year-old boy. That's the one I got when I got more into trail riding, and it was a Radon Slide Carbon.
Radon.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it was Radon, and it even had 160 travel front and back. A bit steep for today's standard, super light, super like, yeah. In the end, I got my Bronson afterwards, and then I realized how noisy it was. It's crazy. Like, I got on that bike, was like, oh well, I don't need a bell or anything. Like, everything. I think it also fell apart. You can ask Yeti. Like, when I sold it, it was it was really the frame, and every component was just done.
I'm sure you made him a good price.
I did.
Good.
Take it, please.
Yeah. Okay. Next one. Imagine you're Harriet Schedini and you're a bike magician extraordinaire, and you can make riding a bike more awesome for anyone by the stroke of a magic dropper post. What would you do?
I would just make them try out new stuff more often. Just try it out. Just with not too much expectation. Just try it again. Try it more. As basic as it is.
All hail the switchback queen. Switchback or not, tell us about the best, favorite, most skid.
It's a lot on like what you expect and what you get, I think. Like, when you expect, you barely make it, or you're just gonna, there's gonna be a little bit of skid, and then there's like it's usually the ground which is maybe a bit different, and it just explodes way more than you thought, then that's the one. That's the one. It's all about what you think you're going to get and what you're going to get out of it.
Nice mental pictures. Louisa, thanks again for your time. This is really, really cool. If listeners have any questions or want to learn more about your learning techniques and the best pump track lines, where can they find you? How can I get in touch?
Yeah, I think there's only one way, and that is Instagram. So it's Pascal knows very well how to spell my name there. It's Louisa-Marie with two I, because of course Louisa Marie was taken and I wasn't more creative when I created my Insta profile. So, but probably also easiest to find via any of your story and posts lately. That's probably easier than looking for the
absolutely. Yeah, and we put name. It up in the show notes so you can find it.
Perfect.
And just hit her up on Instagram. Well, thanks again. This is really cool, very insightful, and I hope you know, everyone got a little bit of insight and some tips, maybe some takeaways. And I hope you had a good time, Bryson. Yeah. Thank you, Louisa. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. I for sure have a couple of things that tomorrow when I do the same ride as I do every day on Utley. I will make a bit differently. I'll try it.
Very good. Nice. We had a positive impact.
It was a blast.
I'll send you an update from my
video.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Ciao.